You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
Tell me about your meditating.
I chatted
briefly about that. So, you know, what do you do? What do you discover when you're doing it?
I think it sort of depends on what the intention is kind of going into it. Usually in the morning, I'm just kind of setting myself up for the day. So I try to find that like inner calm and connect to the universe, and just like, it's sort of like a nice reminder of like the foundation of sort of like my atomic structure and how, you know, on a day-to-day basis, life is just kind of about how I choose to be in the world. And it's my job to make it a good day. And so I get to make it a good day by reconnecting to kind of the most basic part of myself, I think, which is just that universal oneness, you know?
Yeah. I really appreciate you saying that. I have contact going back a little while in the Shambhala tradition of Buddhism, more American influenced, but Tibetan Buddhism. And a lot of my training for meditation has come, you know, from that. But I've been very flexible and just really love hearing people talk about meditation and mindfulness. And I think the deep discoveries that you can find in there as an artist, I think listening to David Lynch and TM and Transcendental Meditation and what the wellsprings are for what we create, right? So do you use your meditation in that type of way, you know, away from the suffering artist, all this chaos, drugs, booze, or whatever can happen, but just saying, okay, what is the wellspring when I connect with my breath and try to tame my mind? Is that what you use it for, Sammy?
I think I would say part of it. I mean, I think, you know, I use it to, yes, like center myself and figure out what it is just kind of that I want on a day-to-day basis, but also like in a global sense, you know, for my whole life, like how do I want to feel throughout my whole life? And as an artist, I think it's inevitable that quieting our minds and letting go of the sort of like day-to-day anxieties, even if it's just for like 5 minutes, which now I go for much longer, but I think when you're first starting, you can start to get a little antsy and you're kind of like, what am I supposed to be doing? Am I doing this right? Like, what is the goal, you know? But I think that discovering that there kind of is no end game and it is this endless source of, I don't know, I can't help but just use the same word again. It's like discovering the oneness within and this wholeness within the universe and the universe within yourself. You know, whether you're like, I have David Lynch's, it's just like a coffee table book of his, but it's called Catching the Big Fish. Yeah. He talks about how he's used TM to, kind of just discover specific answers to questions that he has when he comes against a problem, when he's writing or making a film or something. And inevitably, he always finds that answer. And I don't use TM, but I think any kind of meditation is beneficial. That being said, I think whether you're pursuing something specific in that you want, like, you're like, fuck, I can't figure this out, and I'm going crazy trying to do it, and it's just like, okay, let me just step away for a minute. And you might not get the answer in that moment of meditation, but when you open yourself up to the possibilities that are outside of this like narrow framework that we sort of have to force ourselves into day in and day out to just like exist in a society, you know, I think that it can just help to be so expansive. And for me, it has helped me a lot in my creative relationships and my creative partnerships, because I am someone who I think, you know, I had a pretty traumatic childhood. I don't know anyone who hasn't, and it's all to varying degrees, but there was a lot of time in my life where I really had no agency, and I was always kind of at the whims of, you know, a step parent. And when I slowly started to discover myself and who I really was, you know, you get kind of conditioned to behave in a certain way. And when you're behaving in that way, you're kind of going against what is perhaps actually your true self. And so when you find that agency, you sort of swing the pendulum all the way in a direction. And then when you get into creative partnerships, I think it was almost like part of my trauma that made it hard to let go of like the original idea that I had when I was first coming up with something. And
sure.
Meditation has really helped me settle into being okay with letting go. And that's like in every area of my life, and like not needing the answer, not needing to know exactly what is going to happen, but trusting that the right thing will always happen, because that's just how the universe works, you know?
All right.
Being open to like the universe showing me what my destiny is, and not trying to like plan it out in this hardcore way, because you could have everything like scheduled down to like the second, the millisecond, and anything could happen to disrupt that. And if you're rigid, that disruption can cause chaos and wreak havoc on an internal level. Maybe no one else will have any idea what's going on with you, but you feel it, and that sends ripple effects into the world. I really believe like your energy, whether you're using words or not, your energy affects the world. And I, you know, before we started recording, we talked about just like the pandemic having such an effect on everyone globally. And I think we're all a little bit collectively like scared about the future in a way that, you know, I think on some level we should be, so we can be aware of like the changes that we need to make the world better, and see that like everyone deserves for it to be better, not just like rich people or not just like the elite. It's like every person is here and contributing in some way. So why can't we just all fucking make it better?
Yeah.
That's kind of a weird segue, but
no, I'm down with the sentiment. And, I picked up on what you said there about kind of a, like a collective fear. And I think it's a piece that's kind of fascinating, but also could be stultifying, you know, away from mm-hmm. health, you know?
Yeah.
So we are talking with Sammy Westervelt, and folks, Sammy was on briefly with the Death Valley Girls episode we had recently. We chatted outside in Portland, and it was nice to chat with Sammy and share some common interests. We've already hit one as far as meditation and David Lynch, but I'm really interested in the art that you make, Sammy, and chatting about some of that. You know, you're an artist, musician, singer, with got your group Egg Drop Soup, which I really dig, and of course Death Valley Girls. Also, I wanted to ask you about recent film work that you've done with Sour mm-hmm. Party, and I don't have a good handle on what you did in that and what that is, but why don't we go there if you want to just chat about film and video.
Yeah, totally. So Sour Party is the first feature that I've ever worked on, and I'm not only the lead in it, but I also helped write the story and you know, helped my friends who wrote it, you know, just sort of like fine tuning everything and getting it ready. We just actually finished it and started submitting it to festivals last night. So it's all very exciting, and it's about two essentially like stunted like 30 something women who do not have their shit together. And my character is how do I want to put this? I mean, basically, it's like kind of a feminist punk take on the traditional buddy comedy. And my character has lied and said that I got my sister a gift for her baby shower, which I did not. And the last thing left on the registry is more money than I have. And so rather than coming clean and telling my sister that I lied, we decide to kind of go around Los Angeles, me and my friend James, and try to collect money from people who we believe owe us money so we can get this gift. And it's kind of an ode to all of, like, you know, all of our sort of past selves and all of the people that we've had to deal with in Los Angeles as we've tried to, like, come into our own as artists. And there's a lot of weirdos here, and there's a lot of bullshit here. So, you know,
there's a lot of questionable transactions and yes. Money owed and money not delivered.
Absolutely. But we've sort of, like, wrapped this social commentary in this, like, semi-surreal package. And it was such an honor to me to begin with for my friends who are very accomplished filmmakers in their own right. This is their first feature as well, but they've done a lot of really cool shorts over the years, and they're a couple, they're husband and wife, and they're completely brilliant. And so when they asked me initially back in February of 2021 if I wanted to act in a short film that they had written, I was like, absolutely. And I moved to Los Angeles to pursue acting, and then kind of pivoted and started playing music a couple years in, just because I got very disillusioned with the whole industry, not because I wasn't getting cast in things, but just because I felt like I had no creative control over what I was doing. And I was like, why am I kind of busting my ass to make other people's dreams come true? And when I'm not doing things that are actually, like, important to me, you know, I studied philosophy in college. That's what my degree is in. And so if it's
perfect
not,
for the show, thank you for studying philosophy, right? Sammy, we got philosophers here. So stay tuned, everybody, for the next 3 hours. Go ahead, Sammy.
But, you know, so for me, it's like, if it's not extremely hilarious or very deep, I, like, do not care. And so I was really finding that I was having a hard time connecting with any of the work that I was doing, because I was like, everyone, all this shit is so dumb. Like, it's not even dumb in a smart way. It's, like, just ridiculously stupid, and it's not going to help society at all. It's not going to make anyone think about anything. And so what am I doing? Why am I doing this? So I started getting into music more. It's kind of an interesting story, and this is kind of a long-winded answer about this, but this was in 2016. I had taken the money that I was going to be using to take my acting class, and I went and I bought a little MIDI keyboard, and I was just using that to, like, write songs. I previously purchased a bass guitar at a yard sale and when I was living in Pittsburgh, but I never learned how to play it or anything. And then I kind of was like, what am I doing with my life? Why am I even in LA? I feel like I can make music anywhere. And I sat down in my little, like, meditation corner, and I lit a candle, and I was like, universe, what am I supposed to do with my life? And I'm not even being hyperbolic here. Like, 30 minutes later, within the hour of asking this question to the universe, a friend of mine was like, hey, you write songs, right? Do you want to start a band? Yes. And I was like, yeah, oh my God, can I play bass? I don't know how, but I have one. And she was like, yeah, totally. And that friend is Olivia Saperstein, and she is who I now am in Egg Drop Soup with. We started a band called The Pinks, and pretty quickly realized that we have a very special working relationship, and we also realized that we wanted to do something a little harder and a little bit more in line with just, like, our values as feminists and people, and kind of taking a lens to, like, what the fuck is going on in, sure. as far as like, you know, the world and just within the music industry. I mean, I could get into all that stuff. So whatever, I quit acting, cut to early last year. They asked me to do the short film. I'm like, oh my God, yes. They send me the script. It's the short. It's called I Got Us Journals. It's so weird, but it's really fun. Very short. If anyone wants to find it, it's on Vimeo. And then they had written this other short film that they wanted me to act into. And we were going to shoot that in August. And I won't get too deep into what happened to them, but essentially they like went through this experience that kind of brought them to their lowest point as filmmakers. It was like kind of a catfish situation and it just wasn't cool. You should have them on the show because they're extremely smart and just like with it people. And so they go through this experience. I'll let them talk about it when they're on. Yeah. And it's not my story to tell, but essentially they were basically like, fuck this, we're making a feature. And so they called me over and they were like, we cannot handle the bullshit anymore. Like, we're just going to go for it. Are you in? We're going to take this short script and develop these characters into a feature. And I was like, hell yeah. So we figured the story out and we had the first version of the script, I think within like 3 weeks or something, just like crazy like that. And yeah. we kept working on it and working on it and slowly assembled like the most just like every person on our crew. It was this very skeletal crew, but everyone was so scrappy and so talented and just like essential to what we did. And it was like a little family. And we started shooting in January. And, you know, because of my touring schedule and everything, we had to kind of do it a bit piecemeal. So we started shooting in January. We shot the bulk of it between February and March. And then we had like one more scene that we weren't really even able to shoot until July. And then once we finished that, it was straight into editing. We had a couple of focus groups, did like a survey, figured out where things needed to be cut, perfected it all. Like it's just all happened so fast, but yeah. it's like, oh my God, we did something. Like we made something and it's like, not too shabby, you know?
Yeah. And I'm glad to hear it. You know, I, one of the things is I've had, different, artists, as you know, on the show and filmmakers and, you know, recently had a couple, Liz Kiger who did, Orfeo, in kind of a modern, different retelling of the Orpheus myth. Cool. And Matthew Kyle Levine worked on that. And he has some films that he's worked on and just seen the whole, it's been exciting to me connecting to smaller or independent films and submitting them to festivals and seeing how they gain their life. And it's great to follow. And I feel it's such more of an intimate connection that, you know, to the films themselves. Totally. So, yeah. And as far as just, you know, anything as far as general availability or timetable around?
I mean, it all kind of depends on what happens on the festival circuit. We, like I said, we just started submitting last night. We hit, I'm not going to say which one, but we hit the very last, it was like within 30 minutes of the final deadline. Yeah, like we just got in right under the wire, but it was like, we were all standing there. We were like, oh my God, like, hit submit. This is so crazy, you know, and now we're kind of full force. We've got a good list of all different, you know, kinds of festivals that we want to submit to, I guess, tiers, if you will, rather than kinds, you know, and yeah, I mean, it's all just very exciting. I think we're a little bit like shell shocked. Like, what do we do now? We just wait until what? Like, someone tells us we're in, like, yeah. What are we supposed to do?
It's a go. Know? Somebody's let it's right now. I, yeah. It's exciting to hear, and I wanted to ask you about that. And well, we definitely have a whole bunch to talk about, but I wanted I wanted to cut to a track from Egg Drop Soup and let listeners hear a little bit of music before we drop back in. And the track is Hors d'oeuvres, and I was wondering if you could mention anything to take us into that track that listeners might want to know about it.
Sure. I mean, this track is like actually based on a true story from a day that I mouthed off to a boss at an old job. And because I had just had enough. I mean, I don't know if you can tell from all the other things I've said up to this point, but I'm not meant for the corporate structured office.
Presents particular challenges for your makeup, I guess. Right?
and I really like, you know what, I'm not even going to say I tried my hardest, because I don't know, there's like a meme that circulates every now and again that's like, I bring the energy to the office of like, we should all just quit. And that is totally me, because I'm just like, fuck the man, like, whatever, we're just here because we need a paycheck, you know, like, this is such bullshit, who gives a fuck, you know? And so I definitely wasn't not like that the whole time that I'd worked there, but I did my job and I did it appropriately. And I have a lot of other skills that this particular company could have utilized. And anytime I would sort of volunteer my services, it was sort of like, that's not in your job description. That's not your job. Like, that's not what you're supposed to be doing. And, you know, it just, it got to me. I hit my breaking point and I mouthed off to this lady. And then, you know, she called me in her office and she was like, you can't talk to me like that. And I was like, I basically just was like, I can't handle this anymore, but I didn't quit. I was like, I'm just going to keep it going, you know?
Yeah,
and then the following Monday I got fired. So that is what this song is about.
Hey, all right, we'll play hors d'oeuvres. And I've worked 23 years in the labor movement. I can feel everything that Sammy's talking about. So I can link up with that pretty well. Everybody, hors d'oeuvres from the great band Egg Drop Soup.
I got fired today because of my bad attitude. But my boss was a bitch and I just wasn't in the mood. No, I'm not hip. But tell me, did you pick up the news? Hope it's something exciting, cause I'm fucking sick of the blues. I'm smart, but I never apply myself. Getting high in a room all by myself. Now tell me, did you get my complaint? Over and over and over, I have no restraint. I'm stuck in a room all by myself. Getting high, but I never apply myself.
Love it.
Thank you. And that video is really fun too. I kind of made that one all by myself in my apartment. I had some help building out little things, but I built all these little sets, and I made the video is like predominantly hand puppets. And so I built all this little stuff, and then I had my bandmates and another friend come over to like be puppeteers. And Did a lot of fun, like little things with green screen. I taught myself After Effects to edit this thing, and I'm definitely very proud of it. It's pretty janky, but it's it's
love
fun.
It. That's great. No, I really enjoyed. I was starting to listen to music after I met you with Egg Drop Soup, and I love that song. Basalt, that really,
oh, yeah?
really appeals to me. Like, I don't know. There's like a deep metal in there that really feels good
totally.
To me.
Totally. So, that's absolutely really. Olivia's influence. She loves metal music. I will not front. I do not know much about it. Like, every now and again, I'll come in with like a really hardcore, like heavy riff, and she'll be like, "That's so metal." And I'm like, "Cool. I..."
Well,
like, I can't, you know,
well,
but
it's strange on that sound. Like, I've talked to friends, say in Eugene, Oregon, right? And they're playing this, they're jamming. And then, I was like, hey, you know, not to typify or categorize everything, but like, are you a stoner sludge doom band here? Like, do you know? And they didn't know the terminology. And it's like, I don't know
right.
if that's metal or like people listen to this. And I'm like, yeah, they do. A lot of them listen to that. So always good. No, I love to hear that. So going over to the other side, Death Valley Girls, and of course recently it was fun, recent episode with the Death Valley Girls. We had Mark J. Palm was a recent guest on the show, do some animated panels and such.
Yeah, so that was really cool.
Yeah, it was fun to connect around all that. But just speaking about just your general time and working with Death Valley Girls and what they do, because they're cool as heck and a lot of fun and a ton of creative energy with the podcast. You've been on the Death Valley Girls podcast. Everybody listen to that. But what about the Death Valley Girls stuff for you and what you've been doing with that?
Totally. I mean, Bonnie is such a creative powerhouse. You know, she's always coming up with cool ways to like just innovate for the band and for herself as an artist. And I feel really honored to be a part of all that. I was a fan of theirs, and I'll never forget the day that they asked me to pick up a couple gigs. I just air quoted for those of you who can't see what I'm doing. I had actually been in visiting my sister in New York City for a few weeks, and I lived there. That's where I went to college. And I was actually born there and moved to Kentucky when I was a kid. So I've always felt very connected to the city. And I kind of was like, I don't really want to go back to LA. I don't know what I'm going to do, but something is like making me feel like I should stay here. And it was like hours before I was supposed to fly out. And I'm like, I don't know, should I change my flight? And then I get a message from Larry Schemmel, who is the lead guitarist of Death Valley Girls. Also just legendary guitarist in his own right. And he was like, hey, we were wondering if you'd like to pick up a couple gigs with us playing bass. We've got some festivals coming up. And I was like, I am definitely going back to LA now because this is crazy.
Yeah.
Totally unexpected. And, you know, as a relatively new bass player, I really never expected that any band, let alone a band that I have looked up to and just been so inspired by over the years, would ask me to like fill in. And then I think it was like after our first practice together, which like I busted my ass to learn all the songs and just be like so on point by the time we had our first practice.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to be impressive. And then it was like, oh, you should just play whatever shows you want with us. And I was like, okay, that's cool. And then we played our first show together. And then I was like, okay, so like, I don't want to be like the like new girlfriend who's like, where is this going? But you know, like, am I in the band? And they're like, yes. And it was like, just, it's just been so much fun ever since. And truly, you know, I already used this word, but just really an honor. They're so experienced just in the world of touring and the world of recording and everything. I've learned so much being a part of this group for the last year. And I really am so excited for the record that we have coming out, which I can't talk too much about because that hasn't, I guess, been like announced to the general public yet. But we did record something in February that I'm very excited about, and the world will know more about that very soon.
Yeah, love to hear that. That is so great. And just hearing about, I mean, it comes through with your words and what I was saying, I could pick up on it, the energy that's around it. It's like, it's an art project, and seeing, you know, just from the way you're talking and your personality, like dropping into that is such a great thing. All right. Conceptual here, big, this philosophy art show, digging into a lot of things, but what is art? Sammy Westervelt, what is art for you? What is it?
I really appreciate this question because it's so subjective, and I feel like you can find art in so many things if you choose to look at it that way. So, of course, art can be a painting or a sculpture, but art can also be a tree in the woods or like a well-placed toilet in a selfie. Like, it just happens to be the viewer's perception. Art could also not be a painting or a sculpture. Like, it, you know, it totally depends on who's looking at it, what mood they're in that day, where are they, you know, like it, but that's something about art that I love, is that it's completely in the eye of the beholder. And it's this thing that is so, the perception of art or what is or is not art is like kind of indicative to this thing that we forget a lot of the time, which is that everyone is existing in their own reality. And what is truth, you know, kind of gets tied into that. And, you know, sort of just kind of coming to terms with how every individual brain's perception of a thing creates the thingness. I don't know how else to put it.
Hey, so I mean, the thingness, if you get the thingness, shows something rather than nothing. I haven't got involved. I mean, everything we're talking about is thingness. It's
right.
Fine. I don't know how much to project beyond that. No, even when you're saying, you know, making something with art too, right? The activity with it, not to downgrade the idea, you know, of like art, what art can be, you know, because I think when it comes to, when I've seen the experience, and it could be such a personal experience of somebody looking at an art piece and knowing and seeing that their soul is feeling it and they're emoting in that way. And you're like, how does that happen? Right. And subjectively, that's what happened. I saw that happen to somebody in the room, a room full of Monet's paintings. Mm. And it was like, and they just melted. And so those experiences are there, but like you're talking about, the subjective nature of the question is always what's so tantalizing. I think most folks, our inclination is to say, ah, shit, I didn't want to answer. I don't know. You know, if it's like art to you, then it's like art to you, then it's kind of like art. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, so, I know. Yeah. I took a course in college that was like specifically kind of dealing with this question, and it was very cool. It was a really hard class because this has been, I think, one of a big question philosophers have tried to answer over time is what is art? What makes something art? And I think that is kind of the answer, is it is subjective, but then collectively we decide that something is art, that something belongs in a museum, you know. Who gets to decide that? How does one person's perception of something ripple through the collective in such a way? Or why does like one particular sort of presentation of something equal art? Like I have, you know, like I have all of these pieces from like set designs that I've done over time. And, you know, it's like, why is this tie-dyed tapestry not art, but this like splatter painted tapestry is, you know? It's like, what is the difference there? And is that all in perception, or is there something innate about those two objects that makes one art and not the other? Like, it's a timeless classic, if you will, this sort of conundrum between these things. And I think about this all the time, honestly, and how to live artfully. I have this friend, she was the production designer on Sour Party, actually, but we've been friends for many, many years. And she was involved with this museum hotel in Kentucky called 21C. And I think 21C now exists in like other cities, but the flagship location is in Louisville, Kentucky, downtown. And it's this combination of like a hotel and an art gallery. And as the sort of like opening of this hotel was happening, she lived in the front window of this place as like a living art piece. And people could come by and write her note cards, and she would respond with note cards back. And the exhibition was called Life as Art. And I think that there's something to be said for trying to live artfully, but then what does that mean? Is it like the knowledge that one is always being objectified by anyone who is observing you, and not objectified in the sense of like, you know, like sexual objectification or something like that, but just that
seen as an art object, something is on display.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, and is that even what it is? How could it not be? You know, like, I don't know. We literally could talk about just this one subject for like 3 hours, you know? It's a thinker for sure. I feel like my answer is generally always the same, but it changes, and it changes based on, my mom's calling. It changes.
Oh my gosh. Hey, wait a second.
I'll call her back.
No. All right. I get a lot of mom listeners out there, and I don't want to cut out that demographic. That's sorry. She's going to call her back. I think when you mention is, and you're right, philosophers over the ages, like, I think if you look at least within the Western philosophical tradition, you always had to deal with this question when you were like a big philosopher all the way back to the Greeks and like Kant and Nietzsche and all these philosophers. You had the answer. If you were like a big theoretician, you always had to answer what it was that you considered art. And one of the coolest puzzles I always was introduced on, like, where the art is in music, it was like a really interesting conundrum, because the juxtaposition was like one where you have like maybe a sloppily played or averagely played piece of music. And then in trying to find where the music is, if you take somebody who looks at the score of what that music is and the perfect structure of what that score is and sounds, and if they can hear it, the sounds, in their head, and there's some type of structural beauty or perfection towards there, it's like the idea that the true perfect music was in that experience, which is not auditory as we understand it. And I think that type of mystery of like, because for me, I'd be like, I love live music so much as the years have gone by, and it's kinetic and it's fleeting. So you're like, is that the song? Is that the version of the song?
Right.
And I love those mysteries. I saw Roger Waters play a version of one of my favorite Pink Floyd songs, Sheep, a week and a half ago.
Love that one.
And I thought it was the most gorgeous thing I had almost ever heard live, and it sounded different. So for me, that's the song. So I don't know. It's a lot of fun.
Totally. And I just had a thought. It's like maybe art is just like the experience of an emotion through the like viewing of an external expression of someone else's emotion, because that's kind of what it, a lot, you know, like we create from a feeling most of the time, yeah. whether, you know, it's sadness or happiness or anger, you know, we write a song or we make a painting, which I'm not a painter and I can't draw. These are things I cannot do. I'm, you know, like that's not stuff. That's not how I express myself. But like a script or a film, you know, is a way to express one's emotion. Then you think about something like architecture being art, you know, as Frank Lloyd Wright, is he feeling his feelings through, you know, designing a building or house, you know, like, I don't know, but I know that I feel something when I see that. And, you know, but I also know that I feel something when I see my favorite pair of shoes. Like, you know, I don't know. It's, and is that art? I don't know.
Well, we haven't solved it. We're talking with Sammy Westervelt, and we haven't solved it, but we've been talking about our band, Egg Drop Soup, and of course, the Death Valley Girls, and small film project, deeper inquiry into film with the Sour Party, and Sammy, it's great chatting with you. I got a couple, another big conceptual question. We already got it because we were like talking about things and using that in our language, but there is the big question of the show, and you are a philosopher and a thinker, and have already admitted you obsess over these things. So why let's ask it this way: if there is something rather than nothing, why is there something rather than nothing?
I think because our consciousness is here to perceive it as something, perhaps. I mean, I obviously can't know that for certain, but I feel as though I am a conscious being, and I'm almost certain that I'm observing the things around me, and those things are some things, thinging. And
yeah,
I kind of think that's it, at least for me. But then that kind of goes back to just like the objectivity versus subjectivity, you know, like I'm not sure that I can know for certain truly anything objective. And I think that's something cool about science, is that science is always trying to prove objective reality, and, you know, does a fairly good job of it. But then we also must consider that a subjective experience is analyzing these objective results. And so everything is fallible. And that's what kind of makes science science, is that it is fallible and can be updated with new research and new findings. And, you know, that's kind of the difference, right, between like science and then like a pseudoscience, which is like people can say whatever they want and there's nothing to like back it up necessarily or not back it up. That's like my favorite. That's like my favorite joke on the like Ancient Aliens, is the whole thing where it's like they never said that that wasn't what was happening. You know, it's like, okay, I mean, yeah, I guess that checks out, you know, like there's not really someone we can ask about it.
You're still seeing active sophistry by turning on the TV. You can't say that it's not. I haven't seen it, but you can't say it isn't. So, and I guess you're right.
Right.
We're talking science, or are we on a philosophy podcast? Sammy, a couple more things.
Yeah.
What I wanted to do, and of course we mentioned these things, but I always love when artists kind of like just dive in a little bit to connect folks and listeners to like your you know, it's kind of disparate art that you do in the bands and where to find things. And after that, too, we're going to play a track to take us out. But is it pronounced regicide or regicide?
I mean, regicide. You're gonna solve this problem.
Regicide. Okay.
Yes.
So now when we get to that track, it'll be regicide. We'll chat about that. But no, Sammy, tell us where you find your stuff, your band stuff, you know, things like that.
Yeah, sure. Well, Egg Drop Soup and Death Valley Girls and also Sour Party. You know, if you want to chat with us or interact with any of us, you can find all that on Instagram at Egg Drop Soup LA, at Death Valley Girls, and at Sour Party Movie. The movie, like I said, you know, release dates for all of that will depend completely on what happens with the festival circuit, but all of our music can be found on Spotify and Bandcamp and Apple Music, kind of all the main streaming services, Bandcamp. We also sell merchandise. And then I think for Death Valley Girls merch, that is through the Suicide Squeeze website.
Oh, that's awesome. And I didn't know. Oh, great. Bandcamp. You get some merch there.
Yeah.
on Bandcamp. Love Bandcamp. A lot of folks might know about it, but if you don't know about it, a great resource to kind of help more directly support artists and the work that they do trying to get the money that artists deserve when they create these wonderful art objects. And so, Sammy, it's been so great to chat with you, and thank for, you know, for leading us to, I'm going to be super excited to check out the film. I've been listening to the music, and of course, even though I've been vegan for 25 years, Egg Drop Soup is totally, you know, totally vegan. Don't worry, folks. Don't want to cut any. This episode's about not cutting out demographics. You know, Sammy was okay not picking up the phone, and her mom was calling. She's going to get back to her. Everything that's fine. And but no, really do love the music. And for the last track taking us out, you helped me with pronunciation, regicide. A great concept, you know, for radical movements throughout history. But tell us about the track, and we'll go out with regicide.
Totally. Well, I first just want to say thank you so much for having me on. This has been a real treat. I don't ordinarily get to talk philosophy like this amongst my peers, so this has been nice to dig back into these parts of my brain. The song was written during Donald Trump's presidency, may or may not be clear. And it's just kind of a channeling of my frustrations about that era. And, you know, not that we're not still feeling those or seeing the ripple effects from that. I mean, perhaps even much of it is even worse than we could have imagined. And, you know, this is just kind of a song dealing with that, but then also kind of on a larger sense, just kind of like dealing with with our government as a whole, and like, you know, like how we got here and how like deeply hurtful it all is, honestly, to like live in this society as a contributing member, but then get really nothing in return and wanting to start fresh.
Yeah. And being attacked by the executive, being attacked by the legislature. And that was even before the judicial massive corruption. So no, I and here's the thing too, like I don't know why, just talking about like the Trump stuff, one of the things that I noticed, I've been around just a few more years than you. I'm 50, and but I've seen such change. I tell you one thing with this Trump stuff and these fascists, you know, they're getting away with stuff because there was a generation before who were not fascists. You know, they might have been conservative. They were not fascist. And I might have not agreed with any of their politics or whatever, but they did understand the concept of the democratic system, whether they felt for it, they fought for it in a war. And the type of shit that people say just simply wouldn't have been allowed in society with folks. And
totally.
You know, the bootlicking and supporting of and just wanting this big daddy fascist leader because of others. Like, it's so messed up. It's such a different dynamic. And I think it's just as we're just as polluted now as we've ever been. And that's my worry with it.
Absolutely. And it's sort of, I mean, it's kind of this like reconciliation that we are coming up against from not dealing, you know, as like in the United States, not dealing with slavery sort of being the foundation of our country's like whole system. And on top of that, I don't know that like Nazism was ever fully like eradicated or dealt with. How could it be when the tenets of slavery never really were either? You know, it's sort of like, let's just hide these people. Let's just hide, you know, these inequities within our laws. Let's like hide literal like Nazis in our country and place them in our government. And it's like these feelings and these, what am I trying to say here? It's like that way of being gets trickled in and it never really goes away. And when you live in the States that is so repressed, as far as dealing with the trauma that we've caused other people, we don't talk about it. Like, at least in Germany, there is this collective, almost malaise over the sadness for what happened there during World War II, because they learn about it and they talk about it. And right. Here we've swept all that shit under the rug. And so it gets allowed to like fester and people just, you know, hang on to it. But it's like none of that ever went away. And we're not really that far off from when the initial like civil rights movement happened. And that isn't where things needed to stop. That isn't where the movement for social justice needed to end. And now we're at this reckoning where it's like, oh, whoops, you know, like, our parents' generation like maybe thought that was it, or maybe just didn't want to deal with it anymore. We all can understand what that kind of fatigue feels like, but now it's our responsibility to seriously be like, never again. Like, we got to deal with this shit and we cannot go backwards. And what is happening in the Supreme Court right now, and just our whole system needs like a factory reset. Like, what is the deal, you know? And I'm someone who, you know, my parents really taught me the importance of my civic duty. I've been rallying like at political rallies since I was 16, before I could even vote, you know? But it's your duty to do what you can with the little small, you know, boxes that you get to check off every 2 years or every 4 years, you know, to be involved in that way. But as I get older, I'm struggling more and more to feel confident in what that system can actually do. Yeah. and what sort of change it can actually cause, because we're not really seeing it, and we're not really dealing with the big problems.
The structural issues, right?
The structural issues and the innate, like, just how innately kind of fucked up it is. And how insane is it that we refer back to a document that was written by white men who owned slaves in like the late 1700s to govern people who, like, not only just for the sheer fact that hundreds of years have passed, but think about technology now and how much access we have to things that we never have had before. and just how much faster our minds are evolving. So we've evolved way past whatever that was. And now it's kind of like as your own body gets older, and this may or may not be a personal sort of anecdote, but let's just say you hurt your knee one night at a Halloween party when you're drunk and you don't really take care of it. And then you're 34 and all of a sudden your knee starts to hurt when it gets a little rainy outside, or you can't quite sit in the same ways that you used to because things are starting to feel a little funny. Well, you know, that's someone not dealing with the problem and just maybe letting it get a little worse and worse. So if we think of the United States as a body that hasn't dealt with its own illnesses and its own little like pieces of itself kind of getting a little weird here and there, it's going to completely fall apart. So I don't know, we need to amputate some shit and get bionic here, because this is not working and it is not going to work in the long term.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think I see the positive notes, despite everything you're saying, is that when it comes to the consciousness around the labor movement, we are looking at the most radical pro labor, generation, basically in a long time in history. When you look at the general attitudes of the populace, of the people overall, they skew very progressive. And I see the political crisis right now is that I think the conservative fascists, et cetera, know that the popular will, they can't win with popular will. And there's one choice remaining after that is to seize the
I know.
Seize the government or seize the states or whatever. And that's
totally
that's when you're talking about the structure. I feel that sometimes that's the piece, you know, that
absolutely
is in the way. So
it's not just a problem here. It's like worldwide issues that we're seeing, especially like with women's rights. You know, like what is happening in Iran right now is absolutely insane. But it is also amazing to see so many women being like, you know what? Fuck you. Like, this is not okay. And standing up. And, in Poland, like, abortion is almost completely, or maybe perhaps is completely illegal right now. It's like, you know, these are not new problems. These are things that I think human society has probably dealt with since the inception of whatever that is. And probably even before, this eternal kind of seeming power struggle between the people and the power, you know, I air quoted that, guys.
announce it each time. It's wonderful.
and you know, it's like the people and the patriarchy, and we're kind of like the patriarchy is holding on by a thread, but we can no longer be complacent. And I'm inspired by how progressive people are, and I think now it's kind of just about figuring out where to put that progress and how to come together and realize that, like, you know, we all want the same thing, and like Mitch McConnell has got to go, and all these like old fogies up in there, not to be ageist, but like, y'all don't know what is going on, you don't really know what the people want, and all you care about is like, is this super PAC going to pay for your next like yacht vacation with your family? And it's not right. And we need just a full on restructuring of this whole world. But like, let us start like somewhat locally and try to help be a ripple effect. I mean, the states for so long has been this kind of like, I don't know why, but for some reason, this maybe because of this like sort of fake ideology of like freedom here. And yes, I know we have a lot of freedoms that a lot of other countries don't have. I do not take that for granted. I don't take for granted at all. I'm sitting here speaking about this openly with no fear of any repercussions from my government. And that is an insane privilege, like beyond. I know that there's so many people who don't have that, But why can't we take that further and be this like beacon of freedom that the world has always seen us as, instead of going back in time and trying to continue to control the body politic? It's not okay. So that's what the song is about.
Hey, Sammy Westervelt, and the perfect intro to the outro, regicide, Sammy Westervelt. Hey, thank you so much. It's a great pleasure to know you, to chat with you. We're going to play that track and really, really, really look forward to all the art that you are creating and will create. Thanks, Sammy.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Something Rather Than Nothing.